Welcome to Recalculating Small Business.
Next guest is here to tell us about a subject that's concerning us all, especially here in the small business area. As everybody knows, the Senate and the House have each passed a new tax amendments. They now have to reconcile them. We have author and CPA Tom Wheelwright here to talk about the potential tax plan impacts on small business and what might be happening in the congressional conferences. Tom, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks very much. Great to be on the program.
Tom, tell us first a little bit about your background, which is fairly unique, and before we get into anything else.
Well, I was in Washington, D.C. the last time I had major tax reform, 1986, with the National Tax Office of Ernst & Young. And that was fascinating back then. I've also been an adjunct professor at ASU for 14 years, run my own CPA firm for 25 years, and wrote Tax Your Wealth. Mostly what I do is educate entrepreneurs, small businesses like our listeners here, on how to permanently reduce their taxes.
Well, that's really terrific. Your website, before we go any further?
It is taxfreewealthadvisor.com, taxfreewealthadvisor.com. Thank you.
Can you spell it out for our audience?
I can. It's tax, T-A-X, free, F-R-E-E, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, advisor, A-D-V-I-S-O-R.com.
Well, from here on in, I'm going to turn you over to Dan, because this is an area that he knows well and you know well. So go to it, Dan.
Thank you. And good morning, Tom. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. So great to be with you.
Yeah. We have two competing bills, House and Senate. Some elements of similarity and some great divergences between the two processes. I think the first question that I would like to ask you, do you think we're going to get a bill?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody wants the corporate tax reform. Nobody's arguing about that. I mean, frankly, if the Democrats were included, they'd probably even vote for the corporate tax reform. It's the rest of it that's, I think, challenging for people, particularly the individual provisions. But in order to pay for the corporate tax reform, you've got to raise the money somewhere.
Tom, I write commentary for a lot of blogs, and I recently wrote a commentary about the tax bill and have been dismayed at the logic or lack thereof in both houses. Both seem to be driven by a static model of revenue neutral, driven by an evaluation done by the Congressional Budget Office. Our economy is anything but static. In fact, you may have seen yesterday where the president says that he thinks it's possible to achieve a 6% growth in GDP. Now, 2 weeks ago, Goldman put out a review for 2018, and they think it's possible that it could be 4% or a little higher, numbers we haven't seen in a long, long time. I often wonder why we use a revenue neutral bias when one of the alternatives is to cut the budget. So I'm still dismayed that we have both houses. Nobody seems to be talking about, I know that's a broad statement, nobody, but do you think there's a possibility that what might come out of this is some budget reductions?
It's interesting. Actually, I was just reading this morning. I know that's on Paul Ryan's list, the budget reduction. And I know that it's quite a bit separate from the tax bill. I don't think it'll be part of the tax bill. You know, the neutrality of tax bills goes way back into the 80s. when the Senate passed, they passed legislation that said that any tax bill had to be revenue neutral. So it's really a function that they decided long ago that they were going to do revenue neutral, and they haven't changed that and probably won't.
But the concern that I have, Tom, is that, excuse me, if you look at our budgets are in deficit. We've got $20 trillion of outstanding debt. Where's the revenue neutral there? Where is the offset? Where is the it didn't happen.
Exactly.
So, you know.
No, it's absolutely true, and that's what happens when you have different rules for different things. So we have, you know, it's like the 1986 Act was revenue neutral, and yet the 1986 Act caused the real estate crisis of 1989, which caused huge federal deficits. So you can say the bill itself was revenue neutral, but the effects certainly weren't revenue neutral.
Right. So what do you see out of the two branches, the House and the Senate? What do you see? And then I have a very specific question for myself as a small businessman that I know affects a lot of other small businessmen. What do you see that will be positive for small business out of looking at both bills and likely to survive?
Well, I think there's a lot of positive in both bills for small business. I mean, certainly the expensing of all equipment is positive. The reduction in the depreciation lives for real estate is very positive. A lot of small businesses own real estate. That's a huge positive. You know, they eliminated like-kind exchanges, the 1031 exchange for a lot of people, but like for ranchers, for example, they're eliminated, but for real estate, they maintained it. They maintained the carried interest rule as long as you have it for 3 years. For, you know, small businesses that are starting a business, that can be a very important provision. And then even though we're not getting parity, you know, small businesses we think of as being flow-through, because most of us are, and, you know, we go, well, there's not parity with the corporate reduction, and that's true. It's still a reduction, so we're still getting a tax reduction. So that is still positive. Well, you know, people can argue all day long, is it fair? The question is it positive? It's absolutely positive because it's a reduction either on the Senate side in a deduction or on the House side in a lower rate. So I think there's a huge amount of positives for small business in this bill.
Let me ask you a very specific question that I know affects everybody like myself and Don who are LLCs or partnerships,
right,
or whatever that is, flow through. I don't know the exact term, but I can tell you what I call it. There appears to be a tax penalty, which I have to pay for being a small business, and it can be quite expensive. It's a supplemental tax that I have to pay because I am a small business, and in my case, I'm a single employee small business, and you know, it costs thousands and thousands of dollars in this tax. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Which provision are you talking about? You're talking about the effect of the flow through rates. Are you talking about the net investment income tax? Which provision are you referring to?
Currently, there is an item on my 1041 or 1040, whatever it is, where I have to pay an additional tax because I'm a small business.
You're talking about the Medicare tax.
Nope. There's another tax. There's too many taxes. I wish I could be more articulate for you, but last year it was over $10,000. It's because I'm self-employed or I have a pass-through entity, I have to pay an additional tax, and I don't know whether that's an additional Social Security tax.
There is that. Well, sure. I mean, if you're organized as a general partnership or you're organized as a sole proprietor, you pay Social Security tax on 100% of the income from your business. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
But is
There are ways to deal with that. I mean, there are ways to avoid that. So, but you're right. That is there.
So I'm paying a tax, and I'm wondering if I could say this right. When I pay my quarterly taxes, my estimated quarterly taxes, and I'm paying it to the General Treasury. I'm assuming that a portion of that is the Social Security taxes that I would have to pay as an individual.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering, the corporation, my LLC, is also assessed the employer half of the Social Security taxes.
You do. You pay both sides because you're both the employer and the employee. So you are paying both sides of that tax. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's probably what the taxes I'm talking about. It's my corporate Social Security tax. So it's in a sense, is it fair to say in that situation, Tom, that my LLC is not a true pass-through because the LLC has a tax liability because it is an LLC?
Well, no, it is a true pass-through. So in other words, whether you were an LLC or you were a sole proprietor, you would pay the same amount of Social Security tax. So, you're paying all of it, okay? The LLC pays no tax. You're paying all of it. But you're paying both the employer side and the employee side. So it's really flow through. I mean, it's like extra super-duper flow through. You get double tax.
Okay. So let's deal with right now. It's what advice are you giving your clients that they should or shouldn't do between now and the end of the year while we're waiting for this bill to come out?
Well, you know, there are some things that are retroactive, and there are some things that, because they're not retroactive, effectively you have some opportunities. So, for example, if you live on the coasts and you've got a state income, an estimated tax payment for your state due in January, you're going to want to make that now because that's not going to be deductible likely if you make it in January. Same with property taxes. You know, if you can pay your March property tax, okay, or your May property tax now, you're probably going to be better off. So there's that. And then some of the expensing provisions of the new bill come into effect this year, 2017. So if you've been thinking about large capital expenditures anyway, and you're thinking about, should I make them, you know, you can make them now and get the tax benefit in 2017. You don't have to wait until the tax bill, you know, until next year, you know, to get those benefits. So there are things that you can do. The other thing that you ought to really be looking at is, because the corporate rate comes down to 20%, I think every small business has to look at, should we now be not a pass-through? Should we now be a corporation? Should be taxed as a corporation because they're so low. If we're not taking all of the money out of our business, if we're reinvesting a lot of the money into our business because we're growing the business, there's a whole new incentive now to be a C corporation, a taxed corporation, instead of a flow through.
But if I'm a small business and I use this, the small business provides most of my income, so then I'm draining a lot of the money out of the corporation, then if I went to a C corporation, wouldn't I have double taxation on some of that revenue coming out?
You would. What the tax bill, particularly the House bill, does is it effectively brings corporations and flow-throughs to the same tax level if you're at the highest rate. So if you're at a 39.6% rate, individually, in a flow-through, you would pay 39.6%, but there's 30% of that under the House bill that would be taxed at a 25% rate, which effectively brings you to a 32% rate. If you were to be a corporation, you would pay 20%, but then you would pay an additional 15 to 20% on the 80% that you distribute, and you end up at a 32% rate too. So you actually end up with parity between the two. So you're right. If you distribute most of your income, you're probably still better off being a flow through.
Yeah. It seems to me that looking at the provisions in both sets of bills, you said some of the provisions are retroactive. Are there a couple of things that that you can tell our audience that you think you got to do this or don't do that? Something that they can look at their business. I mean, you talked about the changing in the depreciation schedule for both real estate and the expensing of plant and equipment. Is that retroactive or does that go into effect next year?
It is. Well, the depreciation, I believe, goes into effect next year, but the expensing increases go into effect this year. So I think there are a couple of things. I mean, for one thing, make your state estimated tax payment in December, okay? That's an absolute must. You must make it this year because you may not even get it next year. It's not just timing this time. Another thing that really you ought to be looking at is, you know, a lot of businesses wonder, should I own real estate? Well, if you ever were wondering, this would be a time that you would really add in the tax consequences to that because they can be significant to owning your building instead of renting your building. A lot of tax benefits in real estate in this bill. So that's another thing I'd be looking at for sure.
One of the things that we should talk a little bit about is how our pension plans affected, if any, by the law?
You know, they're really not. I mean, we thought they were going to be. It looked like they were going to affect 401k plans and that they were going to have some restrictions there. And the one thing that they're doing is, and here's something that you might want to consider, is that they are going to restrict the rollover from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. So if you're considering that, this is something you ought to sit down with your tax advisor before the end of the year and say, look, should we be looking at this rollover this year instead of waiting, because that rollover is going away in both bills.
So there will be no provision to roll from a regular IRA to a Roth, assuming that the bills pass, in going forward in 2018?
That's correct.
Wow, so that's off the table.
It is.
Any other surprises?
I actually think there's going to be a lot of surprises. The Senate bill is a very odd bill because it's got a lot of details in it. So you really need to look at your industry. I mean, for example, there's special rules for citrus growers. There's special rules for beer importers. There's all sorts of special rules in the Senate bill. So, you know, you got to look at your industry. Make sure you talk to your industry, you know, your industry association and find out what's in there, because if you're in one of those industries that's affected, it can be a real plus for you. So I think the surprises, I don't think the surprises are going to be necessarily negative. I think some of the surprises people are going to find are going to be positives, because there are some tax benefits in that bill that you can tell that what happened was is that Senator Hatch went to each senator and said, what will it take for you to sign off on this bill? And they got little provisions in there. And, you know, they have to – it's the Senate that's driving this, not the House, because the House has the votes no matter what. The Senate needs every single vote.
Yeah. So how do you feel about Ms. Pelosi's description of the tax bill being Armageddon and we're all going to die?
Well, this is the same person who said, let's pass Obamacare first and then we'll read it.
Yes. We don't know what's in it until after we pass it.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
We're not going to know what's in it until after we pass it. Now we know what's in it. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is eliminating that individual mandate. And the question is whether they'll do anything about the employer mandate, which it doesn't look like they will. So that's another little thing that people haven't been talking about. Is that while mm-hmm. you're no longer mandated as an individual to buy insurance, as an employer, mm-hmm. if you have over 50 employees, you're still mandated in offering insurance.
Wow. I wasn't aware of that. There's a provision in going back to retirement plans. There's a provision if you are covered by a SEP IRA, especially if you're a small business, single entrepreneur, there's a provision that allows you to set up, I think the current number is like $53,000, up to 25% of your adjusted
right.
or pre-tax income, up to $53,000, which is a huge, huge benefit for a small business that has a SEP IRA. Is that going to stay or is that going to disappear?
Everything I've seen, that's staying. So
wow.
that, yeah, I mean, the same's true with a, you know, solo 401k has the same provision in it.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen says it's going to stay.
Is the 401k as generous as the SEP IRA at $53,000?
It is. The solo 401k and the SEP IRA work the same.
Okay, okay.
And let me jump in here a moment ask our guest to tell us his website again, because I'm getting all sorts of calls that they want to. Tom Wheelwright, tell us your website again.
It is taxfreewealthadvisor.com, taxfreewealthadvisor.com, and it's named after my book, Tax Free Wealth. So if you really want to understand the tax law, Tax Free Wealth, I made it really simple, and it's available everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera.
Well, I've been fascinated by this conversation, so I'm going to turn it right back to you, Dan.
Thank you. Tom, I wanted to move on to the political problem, if that's the I'm not sure that that's the right way to address it, but clearly the tax, as I understand the tax bill, if you live on the coast in New York, New Jersey, California, Massachusetts, very high tax states, there's going to be either elimination of the tax deduction for state income tax or a significant reduction or a cap. Is that going to go through?
For sure. One thing they're looking at, though, is they're going to cap it at $10,000. Whether that means capping it to only be property tax or being a choice of property tax or income tax or sales tax, we don't know that, but it looks for sure that they're going to cap it at $10,000.
Now, there's a discussion about increasing the standard deduction, doubling the standard deduction. And
right.
some people feel that their analysis is that by increasing the standard deduction, you may take a lot of people who might have been able to deduct mortgage interest or real estate taxes or state taxes, and by doubling the itemized or doubling the standard deduction, you're going to pick up a number of people who will still benefit from the increasing of the doubling of the standard exemption.
Yeah, that's for
sure. They're going to gain something of what they lose.
They are. Now, what people seem to miss is that they also lose their personal exemptions. So if you have if you have kids under 18, that's made up with the tax credit. But losing those personal exemptions in some cases is going to mean that you're, even though your standard deduction has doubled, you may still end up with a tax increase because of losing the personal exemptions.
I think it's, as I recall, I live in Florida. There is no state income tax, but there is property
right.
tax in the state of Florida. We unlike where Don lives in New Jersey, who has state and maybe even local income tax in addition to federal, plus some of the highest real estate tax rates in the country. Those key centers of high taxation, are they going to be really adversely affected by this? I mean, significantly adversely affected or not?
You know, it's possible. I think probably less than people think. And for one reason is that a lot of those people are losing their state tax deductions through the alternative minimum tax now anyway. So
mm-hmm.
because you don't get it for alternative minimum tax purposes, right? So a lot of those people that, you know, get big because they have big state taxes because they're making decent money in their small business, you know, they're losing that benefit anyway. So I don't think it's as big as people might think it is. I actually think that the mortgage interest deduction will have a major effect on the coast, because you're going to see a little bit of pressure on property prices. If you reduce the mortgage interest deduction down to a $500,000 cap.
Wow. So that the tax revenue to the state won't be affected. It's just the deductibility of the tax from the federal purposes, right?
Right. I mean, the argument is that a low tax state like Florida. A no-tax state like Florida or a low-tax state like Arizona, where I am, effectively we're subsidizing those states, okay, because of the state tax deduction. That's the argument. So you're right. I mean, the states themselves aren't affected, but the voters sure are, for sure.
Well, then can I jump in here and ask Tom a question? I'm in New Jersey. And we have the highest property taxes in the nation per capita. And the only way local and state government has really to finance schools is by the property tax. But it, and the headlines have been from the last week that doomsday is upon us because this these bills – will affect affect them. If I heard you correct, you're saying it will probably just reduce the upward desirability price of homes. But I would think it would have to start politicians to reassess how they raise money. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, I think that it might. Now, property taxes, you know, when typically when we get a bond election, we're told that, well, you just have to reduce how much you eat at McDonald's once a week, right, you know, or once a month or something like that. It's not that big a number. I think that what the concern is that if you put pressure on the prices, remember, the value of those homes is driving the amount of property tax. And so if the value of those homes goes down, the property tax collected goes down, and I think that's a bigger concern, okay, than the actual deduction of the property tax.
No, it's all Greek to me, to quote Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But if I could ask one question, on the whole, do you think the small business has benefited from this change, or remain the same or been hurt by these changes, in your opinion?
There's no question there's tremendous benefits to small business in both of these bills, through expensing of equipment, through the real estate depreciation deduction, through the reduction in the flow-through tax rate, through the corporate tax rate, because a lot of small businesses do have, you know, our taxes corporations, you know, there's a provision that if you're just starting a small business, there's a provision that if you start it as a corporation, as a C corporation, a taxable corporation, and you sell it after 5 years, there's no tax on the gain. So that's a huge benefit to small business that typically, because of the lack of flowing through the losses in the early years and the high tax rate, of the 35% tax rate, when startups have gone, well, no, we're going to start as a flow-through, like a partnership or, you know, an S corporation. We're going to start as a flow-through. Then eventually we may have to be a corporation. But with this new bill, you know, with these new provisions, that's a huge benefit. If you're starting a small business and you're thinking, boy, in 5, 6, 7 years, I'm going to sell this thing, you could actually completely avoid the gain by doing that.
Dan, you get to ask the last question.
Oh, darn, only one. So following what you were just saying there, Tom, if I were an LLC, would I be better off to reincorporate as a C corporation?
You might be, and it's really easy to make the change. In fact, under the law, they're making it really, really easy to make the change. They're putting some transition rules in. They're really trying to make it easy to change to that C corporation under both bills. So I think you'll find that you'll do the analysis, sit down with your advisor, do the analysis, make sure it makes sense for you in the long run. And then I think that, I'm going to reassess every single client and look at, should we be a C corporation, at least for some of the businesses.
Yeah, because if you're right, if I could switch from an LLC, I'm thinking about a client of mine who is currently set up as an LLC, and I wanted to make sure I understood what you said. If you hold it for, would you say 5 years?
Right.
If you hold it for 5 years and you sell the business, there's no capital
gains
tax at the business level, but the shareholders would have their own individual tax.
No. There's no capital gains at the shareholder level. No capital gains.
Whoa.
Okay? So you can't convert. You've got to start as now there's some planning you can do to, you know, like you say, if you're small enough, you can probably just start new, right? But if you start as a corporation, not an LLC, but now it can be an LLC taxed as a corporation, okay? So you can do that. But if you start as a corporation, then the gains when you sell your stock are not subject to capital gains tax if you hold it for 5 years.
Wow. That was worth the call alone.
There you go.
Tom, is it that for companies going forward or for companies backwards as well?
You know, that provision's been in there for a long time, okay? So this is not – that's not what's new. What's new is now there's an additional incentive because we've got such low corporate tax rates. Now we have to say, look, we know that when we start a business, we're going to have losses for the first year or two. We like to use those losses to offset income from our wages, right? Let's say our spouse is not starting a business and he or she has wages, and we'd like to use those losses and get that tax benefit now, which you lose in a corporation. But the long-term benefit now is so good with a 20% tax rate, and then if you do sell, you get no capital gains. I think there's going to be – I mean, I'm certainly going to encourage more of my clients to set up as a C corporation.
Yeah, good idea.
Oh, Tom, we're talking with Tom Wheelwright, a CPA and author, about the differences in the House Senate versions of the tax bill. We're going to invite Tom back as soon as the bills are reconciled to tell us what's in it. Don't you agree, Dan?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would love to do that.
Please do. Let's stay in touch. And thank you. And tell us once again your website.
It is Tax Free Wealth, like the book, taxfreewealthadvisor.com, taxfreewealthadvisor.com.
Tom,
thank you
so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan, our next guest I'm really looking forward to. Gabrielle Venna is a life coach and business mentor with a background in counseling, psychology, and psychotherapy. She says the trick to a successful and vibrant business is to recognize when you're bored and be fearless enough to make necessary changes. She's here to talk about that and more.
Gabrielle, welcome to the program. I have to tell you, you know, it took me years into my adulthood before a psychologist finally showed me that what happens with me is I get bored and then disinterested. And I wish I had found that out many years ago. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your book or anything else, and then we'll go directly to Dan.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yes, so as you said, I'm a life coach and a business mentor and a joy of business facilitator, which is a little bit of a different perspective. There's so many people that don't put the words joy and business together. So I use this brilliant set of tools and processes to work with people around business and creating it joyfully. And like you said, you know, so many of us do get bored and it can really trip us up. So I love absolutely working with people, both in groups. I teach classes, both live in person and online. And I do individual coaching to really work with people about creating that joy with their business and their life.
Well, you know, it's said that small businesses never permit you to be bored. But my first and only question before going to Dan is, have you found that to be the case with small business leaders?
No. I would say, you know, owning a small business really is a 24/7 endeavor. You know, it's never off the plate. You can't stick it in the background and forget about it. You know, you need to be present with it. And I find, both for myself and people I've worked with, that people can get bored if their business is set up in a way that isn't doesn't lend itself to people's, you know, the business owner's natural proclivities and how they are in the world. It can be quite easy to get bored with the tasks that we have to do to run a small business.
Dan, it's all yours.
Thank you. Well, you know, I, as we were talking before we went on the air, I worked with an employment psychologist many, many years ago, and he said that based on a battery, a test, that I can obtain about 90% of everything I want or need to do the job successfully in about 2 years. And I'm not willing to invest to get the last 10%. And he said, if you're thinking about your life, you've got to think about where you're going to go. Where are you going to have the greatest opportunity? And in his definition, opportunity was the ability to create a path to be able to change jobs and to keep yourself engaged. And I found that I took the job with Merrill Lynch at a huge pay cut, and it turned out to be the right decision because in about 3.5 years, I was leading my class, and if you're the number one guy, it's hard to go higher, and you can try and convince yourself that you got to work harder to keep yourself as number one, but that was never a problem. And I went to New York and then did that for a couple of years and then started my own business. But I got to tell you that business I started in 1989 doesn't resemble anything like the business that I have today. So I didn't leave the business. I evolved and changed the business. And, yeah, you know, there is, even though you have an exciting job, don't you think that there are portions of every job that have a certain amount of boredom to them?
Absolutely. And I love, that's the key is it doesn't necessarily mean if you're bored. And sometimes it does, but for the most part, if someone's bored with their business, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater and start over completely. It can be really being willing to ask questions and being willing to let your business be fluid and mutable so that you can make changes and tweaks to things and how they're done or maybe what your role is in your business and invite a little bit more excitement in, if you can be willing to play with it. And that's really what I talk about, is playing with business. And looking at it as an adventure and trying different things to see what works, it can change everything. And it can really, if your business is that fluid and you're willing to tweak it, make changes, look at it, ask questions about it, it can become a very exciting thing that is always changing and always interesting. And I love what you said about your business. Like, the business you started then doesn't resemble at all the business you have now. And to be interested in business, sometimes that's what's required, is to let it mutate and shift, and to recognize when you are bored and something needs to change.
But, you know, there is to some people, like Don and I are basically independent entrepreneurs. We work for ourselves. We've both run a number of businesses, built a number of businesses. But when you start out as an entrepreneur by yourself with your own idea and trying to build a business, the moment that you bring somebody into the equation, the dynamics of what happens changes, doesn't it?
It does.
And as you add more,
as you add
more and more people, you as the leader have to change.
Absolutely. And I think that's a part of really being a leader in your own business and in your own life, is that willingness to change. And, you know, so many people get a fixed idea of what a business is. You know, we're told how you do business and what the right kind of the right steps to take and the right procedures to follow when you have a business. And so many people get stuck into trying to fit into what others say you should do rather than looking at what's really working. And I just lost my train of thought. When you're working with others and you have other, bring other people into your business, sometimes it can be a brilliant change to look at everyone's roles and reevaluate them as needed. And is the person in the role that best suits them and what they enjoy doing and what excites them? And the same is true for us. And it's sort of looking at like the Peter principle of putting people in positions doing what they do best, and sometimes moving, you know, person A to job C and, you know, shuffling things around a little can make all the difference.
So when you have a small business and you begin to expand, there are things that have to be done. Financial controls have to be put in, personnel, human resources, all these boring things that have to be put in order for the business to actually grow and prosper and make sure that you have the right people. Is that the boring part of the job that makes people bored in general?
You know, for some people it may be. And I know a lot of people, you know, most of us don't have a human resources background or a financial background when we start a business. So it can seem scary, right? We can let something, let's call it fear, but that I don't actually understand this, so I'm going to kind of avoid it a little. And it can seem boring because we don't necessarily understand it. But when you bring in the correct people for the job as you go and as you build, then it's not the business owner's role to be doing the HR. I mean, yes, you need to be aware of everything that's going on, but you can delegate the tasks that are boring to you to someone else. Mm-hmm. And really what I look at is to ask questions rather than coming to conclusions. You can, if you're bored, you can ask. And when I say ask questions, it's really a lot of people will ask questions but have a desired answer in mind. I'm looking at asking questions from a space of wonder and curiosity, just to see what shows up when you ask. So some of the questions I suggest asking around boredom is, what is this boredom telling me? what else is possible or what else could I institute here that I haven't considered? What do I enjoy in regards to my business? What parts of my business aren't fun for me? And really looking at what comes up and then be willing to make a change accordingly. And it may make all the difference and it may not. And if it doesn't, again, play with it, tweak it. Don't look at it as a failure. Look at, you know, okay, I tried this. It isn't really changing things. What is this telling me? Like everything we switch and change can give us information about something else that's possible. I mean, one of the things with Joy of Business we look at is choice creates. And every choice creates an awareness of something different that's possible. So it's really about asking questions and opening the door to possibilities that may not have considered previously, and then being willing to act on them.
So let me go in a little different direction. Let me take the other part of your business, and that is a business mentor. I don't ask this to embarrass you. I just need a piece of information because the resume that I have on you doesn't have the answer to the question. So how long have you been doing what you're doing?
I've been doing coaching. Well, previously I was working in counseling as a psychotherapist. More recently, for the past 6 years, I've been doing life coaching, working mm-hmm. with people as I created my own business. I had a gap in there where I really had to figure out what I wanted to do. I was bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I left a career behind as a result of it, right? And so I did.
Yeah.
I used so many of the tools that I now use with clients, with myself, to really explore what lights me up, what do I enjoy, what do I not enjoy. And then in the last, I would say, 2 years or so, the coaching I do has really taken a natural turn towards people that are in business, entrepreneurs. Maybe people that are just starting out or people that have had a business and would like it to be greater, aren't really happy with it and want something different and something more.
Yeah. So let me ask you with that background, let me ask you a question. Do you think that the people that you're talking to are more or less risk takers?
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. People that show up in my business tend to be, I would say, on the side of more towards risk-taking. But what bridges most of them together is a willingness to be curious about their business, curious about their life, and desiring to shift something. I have had people come to me that don't actually want to make changes, don't want to take any action to do something different, and it doesn't generally create the results they're looking for. You have to be willing to take a chance. And it doesn't have to be big. These can be small tweaks that can change everything. You don't have to completely change your business. Yeah.
Right. I was just listening to what you were saying, and I was thinking about a woman my wife told me about. She was at my wife is president of the local garden club here in Sanibel, and they had their annual Christmas party at a brand new house, and enormous house that comfortably held 100 people. And the wife said to Jerry in a private conversation, she said, you know, I've been married to this wonderful man for 40 years. And in 40 years, I've never had to write a check or pay a bill. And my wife looked at her and said, really? How does one do that? And it's a matter of she decided that her husband had a plumbing supply business and did very well. That he was the guy who made the business grow and gave them a tremendous lifestyle. So if he wanted to run all the money, it was fine with her. So she understood what his strengths were, and she understood what her weaknesses were, and she decided, and she struck a great bargain with her husband. But sometimes when we hire people, especially critical people, I wonder if we spend the time to see whether or not I can be compatible and that person has a similar vision.
Yeah, and that's, again, where I know this sounds so basic, but most people don't ask these open-ended questions about their business, and this is where I would say ask questions before you hire someone. And sometimes you're not going to, you know, if I hire this person, will it create my business the way I would like to? And what you're looking for there isn't necessarily an answer, because you're not going to have a concrete answer with that. You're looking for an awareness of, when you ask that question, does it expand your world? Does it seem light to you? Or if you ask the question, you know, if I hire this person, will they create my business with me? And it gets dense or heavy or contractive, well, then the answer is probably no. The bottom line is, we actually do know what's going to work for our business. And if we're willing to ask those questions and then see whether something is light and expansive or heavy, and follow, you know, trust that and follow that knowing, what I find is people, for lack of a better way to say it, get themselves into less trouble with hiring or business decisions. Because you're right, when you're working with someone and there's conflict and they're not willing to create your business with you the way you would like to create it, that can create a lot of havoc and not joy in business.
Right. Don wants to ask you a question. Go ahead, Don.
Well, you know, I've been listening to this conversation. It always amazes me how Dan gets right down to things. And I wanted to ask you, Gabriel, because it came across my desk and something else, that a study done about 2 years ago about why people leave a business, either sell it or turn it down, found that they did it because it got too routine, and that routine is the killer of a lot of great opportunities. I happen to know of two in my own experience where the owner simply got bored. But how do you recommend people refresh themselves in a business?
Well, that's really, I had not seen that study. That's really, really interesting. You know, there are people that like routine, but like you said, so many of us get bored with it and don't enjoy it long term. I think one of the biggest keys is to start to recognize the boredom before it becomes destructive, and actually use it as a fuel to embark on an adventure to just start discovering what is exciting, fun, and interesting to you. Why did you start your business is one of the questions I would ask somebody. What was it that excited you? What changed along the way where it's not exciting anymore? Are you using your natural tendencies and proclivities to your advantage? Like, if you know you're a morning person and you get a lot done and you're more excited in the morning, can you shift the way you do your business so that you use that time to your advantage? You know, and it depends on the business, but really looking, I mean, some of the simplest things you can do is structure your day in a way that actually really works for you. Maybe you need to work for 3 hours and, you know, take a break and go outside and get sun. Some people don't like being inside all day. It's like, what can you shift? And maybe it's a bigger change than that. But if you start noticing the boredom quickly and being curious about what it is and what that boredom is actually telling you, then you can make changes before you want to dump the whole business. I think it's being present, you know, being present really is what it is. If you can be fully present with you and your business each day, it can mitigate some of the, the downfalls of sticking with the board.
Well, a question for you. In your own experience, can you give us an example of how you got someone to change him or herself from boredom to productivity?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. Yes. You know, actually, I worked with a client who had a business, and she was actually had a life coaching business and was enjoying it and was doing quite well with it, but again, was bored. And actually what we talked about was, it's like the business was running well, but she was still bored. So what I asked her is, like, what can you add to your life that might make your life more interesting, and so your business isn't where you're going to get, you know, all of your excitement and all of your quote unquote needs fulfilled. And what she actually ended up doing was adding a second business that was very part time, working in the fashion industry. She became an independent contractor, and sold jewelry. She added a different business on the side that was very, very part-time, but fulfilled some other parts of her personality that she really enjoyed that she wasn't getting through the coaching business. So it doesn't necessarily mean adding another business, but it could be, you know, do you have hobbies? Are you engaged in the rest of your life, or have you made your business so significant that it's everything? What if it's just one aspect of a full life? And that can make a huge difference. She is thriving now in both businesses and loving it.
So you have a situation where an entrepreneur who's starting a new business is literally spending perhaps almost all of their available time in trying to build a business that's successful, so that there is very little time in their life to do other things. And I can relate to that. If everything revolves around what you're doing in your business, and you're not doing anything, and you're not engaging with your wife and children, or other activities, the business could actually begin to destroy relationships and really not make it a fun place to work anymore. But as you said, if you can find other activities, whether it's going to your children's sports games or taking your wife out to dinner once a week or going to a movie or doing or a hobby or the possibility of another business, it is that diversification that makes us have a much richer life.
Absolutely. I mean, generally speaking, we're not simple beings. We're complex and we're interesting and we have a lot of things we're interested in. And really taking advantage of all of that and having a joy for living, life and living, can really create a different energy with your business. Absolutely. It's it can be a game changer.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Do you have a website that you can tell our listeners about?
I do. There's two places to find me. One is my personal website, which is GabrielleVenna.com, GABRIELLE, V as in Victor, ENA.com. And there is the Joy of Business website where I have a profile and there's tons of information about Joy of Business, and it is Access, A-C-C-E-S-S, Joy, J-O-Y, of, O-F, business.com, joyofbusiness.com.
Gabrielle, thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking with Gabrielle Venna. She's a life coach and business mentor with a background in counseling psychology. A link to her website will be on www.recalculating.biz tonight. Thank you so much, Gabrielle, for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Don and Dan. It was really a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz.